Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Royalist 90 podcast. I'm your host, Eddie. Joining me is a Patrick, but it's not usually my co-host, Patrick Meehan, who works for BN Sports. It's Patrick Murphy, who does a lot of content for Massive Report. If you don't know what's the Massive Report, it's a blog on SB Nation, which covers the Columbus Crew, which is the opponent for Monterrey next week in the quarterfinals of the CONCACAF Champions League. Patrick, thank you for joining us today, or joining me today. Speak a little bit about you and the coverage that you do for, you know, covering the Columbus Crew, because over the last couple of weeks, I've just been, you know, stalking the Twitter account, stalking your Instagram account, because, you know, when the draw came, you know, early February or mid-February, it was pretty much determined that these two clubs would meet if everything went as, you know, football isn't played on paper, but on paper, you knew these two teams would be destined to play each other. So just speak a little bit about the coverage that you do for the Columbus Crew for anybody that's going to be, you know, stalking your blog, stalking your websites for the next couple of weeks.
Certainly. And thanks for having me on. I've been covering the team since 2014. I was previously a fan before then, got into it at the start of the Crew, really. I was pretty young then, but my family had season tickets, so I was at a lot of the games early on, and then really got into it as I got into middle school, high school, and was playing soccer competitively and things like that. But covering the team over at Massive Report, we have a handful of writers who do various levels of coverage. A couple of us that are able to be a part of the day-to-day coverage, and then we have guys who really are still season ticket holder fans and things like that that they contribute as well. I like to think we do a really good job of providing a lot of different stuff, whether it's stories with quotes to opinion pieces, breakdowns, stuff like that. So I don't know about other MLS markets, but I think at least in ours, there's not really another place where you can find kind of the diversity of different content items that, mm-hmm. that I think we provide. So I've been pleased with our work the past several years since I've been involved. I think it's certainly grown. The Save the Crew movement to help keep the team in Columbus that happened a few years ago certainly helped grow kind of the profile of not only the team, but our site as well. So that was an unfortunate situation that I think everyone kind of looks at and says it helped everybody involved. But so that's kind of an overview of what we do. My kind of role in it is, before the COVID pandemic, I was out at practice pretty much every day, talking to the coaches, the guys, all that type of stuff. Now it's all done via Zoom calls and from my living room. So a little bit different, but still trying to stay on top of things as much as possible and, be as dialed in on the beat as I possibly can be.
I'm pretty sure you're going to get a lot of traffic from Mexico over the next couple of weeks, or, you're just going to see an increase of Spanish comments. But let's break down the matchup, because next week, it's the current MLS champions versus the champions from, 2019 or the Apertura 2019. Mm-hmm. When the draw first came out, and like I said, it was kind of destined that these two teams would play. Obviously, football's not played on paper, but what was your, if you can remember back, a couple months ago, what was your reaction when you saw the draw and when you saw the bracket that, if Columbus, got through their round of 16 opponent, that they would be going up against one of the heavyweights in Mexican soccer?
I think it was excited for me personally. The Crew haven't been in CONCACAF Champions League for 10 years. So it's been a lot of watching matchups like this from the outside, on TV and whatnot. And I've been interested in covering, kind of these bigger games. They're always fun, we get them in MLS to some degree, but not on this international level. So to have a team that is as well known as Monterrey and coming to Columbus, and then the Crew obviously getting to go there and, take part in this is exciting. And obviously there's a lot on the line, but just to have teams like this meet is fun. And, I think it's going to provide an interesting matchup. I think you can kind of break down a lot from across the field. But, you know, just from an experience standpoint, I think that this is something the Crew want to be a part of more frequently. You know, under new ownership, new management from the last few years, they want to be involved in Champions League and big games like this. And so for me, it was exciting. But I think from a club perspective, it's also kind of the next step in you know, evolving this club to having a bigger profile and being in these games more frequently.
So let's break down the matchup. Obviously, the Crew's best player, or arguably their most important player, is Lucas Zelayeran, who, you know, Monterrey fans will know his time during with Tigres, who right, you know, is the crosstown rival. What can you say about his game? Because, you know, at Tigres he was okay. Obviously, it didn't work out for him there. But what do you make of his performance since arriving in Columbus and how vital he is? Because, you know, I caught some of the MLS playoffs, obviously the most valuable player there. But what do you make of his performance? What does he mean to the squad? And how has he elevated, you know, the team as a whole? Because as a number 10, you're pretty much in charge of everything that's going to be created, and the offense runs through a typical number 10. But what do you, since he arrived, what can you describe his performance, just integrating into the squad, and what he means to the club?
He's been huge. You know, I was interested because when word first got out that he was a guy that they were heavily linked to, you know, I went back and looked at his time at Tigres, and obviously, as you said, it didn't work out. So it was, I don't want to say I was questioning the decision. I think you could tell just watching that there was talent there, and obviously coming to MLS, it's a different league, it's a different level. But his play has been great. I mean, his first game last year, scores the game winning goal. Just quickly became a big part of this team, both on and off the field. So you mentioned the playoffs, and I think that's where he really shined. Last year was obviously a strange year with the stoppage for 4 months, and then kind of the way they picked up the season and matches were kind of congested, jammed together. So he dealt with some injuries. The team, I know, is hopeful that was more linked to having to play more games in shortened windows than something that will be the case going forward. But when he was on the field, there's no doubt about it that the Crew was a better team. And especially in the attacking third, you know, when he has the chance to create for this team, you know, it just makes them more dangerous. And you know, in the first game of the MLS season this past weekend, the Crew played Philadelphia, who finished with the best record in the league before the playoffs last year. And they did a pretty good job of neutralizing him. And I wrote about it afterwards. You know, I think that's going to be a thing that the Crew sees this year, is teams targeting Zelayeran defensively because of what he was able to do. Teams know who he is now. And obviously in this situation, Monterrey will be very familiar with him because of past experiences. So I think, you know, he's been your classic number 10. He creates, he's able to score when needed. He's teamed well with forward Giassi Zardes. And, you know, I think it's been a big win for the Crew to get somebody like that in here. He was a club record signing, and, you know, it seems like he's been worth every penny thus far.
Let's talk about Zardes, because I live in LA. And so from what I can remember, he was always with the LA Galaxy. Like, that's one of the guys, like, oh yeah, that's the guy I plays for the LA Galaxy. And then he made the transition to the Columbus Crew. I caught a little bit. I was watching that game against the Union. I had, you know, I was doing work, but also had one eye on, so I can't really like go into detail just because I didn't have my full attention on it. But he missed a lot of opportunities, and it's the first game. Obviously, there's going to be some rust, even though they've had a couple of games of actual competition, or at least, you know, games that mattered. But what do you make of, you know, what do you make of him as a striker and now being in these important games? He's someone, because I know they did bring in Bradley Wright Phillips from, you know, he was with the LAFC last year, but he came in. What do you make of him heading into these now important matches? Because he like you said, he links up well with Zelayeran, and, you know, it seemed to work last season. But what do you make of him so far heading into this season and then heading into this matchup?
Yeah, Giassi is an interesting player, you know, not only in MLS circles, but on the international stage. You know, obviously the United States' head coach, Greg Berhalter, used to be the Cruz head coach. He was the one who brought Zardes to Columbus. So there's a lot of debate around American fans of you know, if Zardes is at that level. And, you know, that's a whole different conversation. But what I will say is what he does for the Crew is more important than I think you can really quantify. You know, obviously his goals and assists since he's come to Columbus have picked up. So specifically his goals last year, I think he had 4 assists, which might've been a career high. But you know, he's been a pretty much a double digit scorer every year, had the best years of his career. So, you know, he has increased in that end. I think part of that has had to do with, you know, playing the true striker position in LA. He, you know, played some on the wing. He played some fullback at one point. But now he is kind of the target of the Crew's attack. So the focal point, so to speak. And that's meant he's had chances and he scored goals. He also is kind of the head of their defense and their pressing and things like that. He's kind of the one that starts that. And in tandem with Zellerayan, you know, they'll drop into a 4-4-2 defensively a lot of the time. And, you know, those two will start kind of pressuring to begin the defense. And he's very good at recognizing when to go, when to stay. He communicates well. And that's almost as important as what he does in the goal scoring department. You mentioned the Philly game. He was definitely off in that game, you know, had a couple chances that I think he normally at least gets a shot on target in one of those. He was just it that, you know, I don't have an answer for why. He did play in the first leg against Real Esteli, scored twice in that, but didn't play in the second leg with Columbus up 4-0. So, you know, maybe a little rust, you know, coming off of preseason rhythm and then sitting out for a full week, more than a full week, I guess. Maybe that, you know, kind of messed with his rhythm a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I think Zardes is primed for another big season. He'll certainly be important to this series. You know, if they're going to score goals, he's usually involved in some way. And like I said, on the defensive side of things, you know, he doesn't get enough credit for kind of how he works to kind of start that defense and even getting back on set pieces and you know, dropping in to, you know, help bring the attack out from time to time, things like that, that maybe go unnoticed to some degree. But, you know, as a forward, I think he's proven he's a true number 9 and, you know, maybe he's not the best in MLS, but he's certainly in the conversation of one of the top American strikers within the league.
And so let's talk about the squad as a whole. What are some of the strengths of this squad? I know it's you can't really say, you really can't translate what they did last season to this season because it's a brand new season, but I'm pretty sure there's, and if I remember correctly, when I was watching the broadcast, they said that a lot of there's not a lot of turnover within the Crew, you know, that, so I'm pretty sure a lot of the familiar faces, or at least the key figures within the squad are back for this season. But what are some of the strengths and weaknesses of this squad that you noticed that still remain from last season or are popping up this season? Because I know they did have an injury in that second leg to one of their young players, but what are some strengths and weaknesses of this squad that you know that you've noticed?
Yeah, the strength's definitely the defense, and you know, not just the back four and the goalkeeper, which you know were very crucial last year. But like I said, it's kind of this team defense mentality that starts up top with Zardes and Zellerayan. The Crew finished with the second best goals against average in MLS, or the second best goals against, I guess, in MLS last year, behind Philadelphia, and so far yet to concede a goal. Real Esteli didn't really create much, even in the second leg down 4-0. They didn't put a lot of pressure on, so it wasn't much of a test that way. But Philadelphia certainly did, and the Crew, you know, looked like the team that played so well last year defensively. So that's certainly the big part in terms of, or the probably where they're best. Attacking wise, I think they were good last year. And they hoped to get better. They added Kevin Molino, who's a Trinidad and Tobago international from Minnesota. He was a free agent in MLS this past offseason. You mentioned Bradley Wright Phillips already to kind of help bolster that attack. Molino's currently out with an injury. he's going to miss probably, they said six to eight weeks, I'm sorry, when the injury first happened. So we're probably a week and a half or so into that. So he won't feature in this series, but, you know, a guy that they hope will be a bigger part of the offense as the season goes. But Bradley Wright Phillips is a guy who will add depth. I think if I had to identify a weakness, I would say it's getting into scoring positions probably as consistently as they want against the good teams. And that was something with the Union where in this past game where that kind of crept up again, you know, they certainly had chances to score, but you see it when they are playing some of MLS's worst teams. You know, you can possess the ball and you eventually create chances, but sometimes when they need to move the ball quickly and, you know, switch the field and those type of things to really try and to open up a defense and things like that, it's not as successful. Now, they were also playing without Darlington Nagbe this past weekend, who is in arguably their best player in central midfield. You know, he not only is good defensively, but really helps create things. And he's a guy who can help do, you know, move that ball quickly and things like that. So getting him back, and he's expected to be back for this series, will be important for Columbus. But yeah, the defense is definitely the strength. I mean, they've built on that philosophy of defense wins championships. Obviously it worked for them last year. You know, there were certain games where the offense just wasn't there and they were able to either get a result, sometimes able to bag a goal and get a win. But a lot of times it relied on that defense to kind of carry it until the offense figured things out. And that was similar in the Philadelphia game already this year.
I want to ask, how does the Cruz attack fare against teams who have really good defending? Because that is Monterrey's, arguably that's the strength, the back line, because it all depends on what they want to do if they want to go, you know, their full starters in the first game or keep them for the second leg. I don't know what Javier Aguirre is going to plan or what is his plan for this series. But if they go full starters, their back line consists of four guys who are all national team caliber. I mean, Jesús Gallardo plays for Mexico. César Montes plays for Mexico. Sebastián Vegas plays for Chile. And Stefan Medina plays for Colombia. So you're going to get guys who are not only, you know, guys in their prime, but guys who have national team caliber experience, played against some of the best, you know, whether it's for Mexico or their South American countries. So I just wanted to ask, how does the Crew handle, you know, when they go up against an opponent who has really, really good defending?
I think this is going to be that, you know, that kind of test. As you just kind of laid out what the Crew's about to face. It's a different level than what you see week in and week out in MLS. I mean, you know, I keep going back to the Philly game because that's the only one we've seen really this year. And, you know, the Union had the best defense last year in MLS. When the Crew played them last year, again, more or less the same attackers as we'll see here for the first little bit of the season, at least in terms of the starters. You know, the games were tight and it was, you know, taking advantage of those chances that do come. And I think that's going to be the big thing for the Crew in this, is when there's an opportunity to score that goal, you know, do they take it? Is Zardes, you know, on for these two legs, you know, like he wasn't against Philly. So, I think like any game, you know, when you play a good defense, you have to take your opportunities. You know, the Crew certainly have attackers who can do that. It's just a matter of being on that given day. So I think this is going to be a huge test for Columbus's attack and kind of proving where they stand going into this season, you know, MLS wise, and obviously, you know, wanting to advance in the Champions League, because as you detailed, it's about as good of a defense as you're going to face, you know, here in CONCACAF.
I want to ask, what's one player that obviously that's not Lucas or Zardes? What's one player that if you know, if you see that player needs to have a really good two legs, because that he's very underrated, but he would be key if the Crew wants to advance past Monterrey. Who's that one player or two players, if you want to go with that need to show up and need to perform at the highest level, whether they've shown it before or you believe they have that type of potential to show up for these big matches? Who is one of the player or two of the players that you believe that needs to like elevate their game to the next level for the Crew to advance?
Yeah, I'll give you two. The first one, center back Jonathan Mensah. He's, you know, the team's captain. He played every minute of every game last year. You know, he's kind of the rock defensively. So when he first came to the Crew, which has now been several years ago, he took about a year or so to adjust to MLS. There were some really shaky moments his first year in the league, first year plus, really. But the last probably 2-3 years, he's really settled in, was a candidate for Defender of the Year last year in MLS. You know, he's been their rock defensively. So he will be key. You know, he'll have to play as well as he's played since joining the Crew, I think, in this series for them to, you know, not only play well defensively, but, you know, he's also a threat on set pieces, scored a goal against Real Esteli. So both sides, he'll need to be good. The other one I will say is Luis Diaz. He's a young Costa Rican winger, usually plays on the right, and has looked really good in the first three games this year. This is his third season, second full season with the team. And when he got here, he was very, you know, exciting, speed, but not a lot of control, needed to work on the tactical side of his game. And we've slowly but surely over the last couple of years seen that development from him. And, the you know, for example, against Esteli, he had a play where he got in behind the defense. And typically, you know, he just blasts the ball and, you know, hopes a goal came out of it. And this time he cut it back as got his defender to blow by him and then played a good pass to Zardes, which led to a goal. So things like that have shown development from him. And I think, you know, with what he can bring from his speed and physical side, if he's also mentally into the game and tactically, you know, dialed in, I think he can be a real danger for them. You know, when you talk about some of the other attacking pieces that you have to focus on in Zelarayan, in Zardes, Pedro Santos, who plays on the other wing typically, you know, he's kind of that fourth guy that maybe goes under the radar a little bit, but could be a big piece in a series like this.
So I hate to just make this about me asking you questions, because I know maybe you know, you're going to have, you know, people who follow the Crew want to get a full picture of, you know, what are they going to be facing these, you know, these two games. So I want to just ask you, what do you want to ask me when it comes to Monterrey that I can answer that you might either are just curious about, or, you know, you just want a full picture on, whether it's, you know, a certain player, a certain style, or the position wise, because we already talked a little bit about the defense, that people either, you know, whether they knew or they didn't, but Monterrey, like I said, their defense is their calling card. If I'm not mistaken, I haven't checked the stats, but they're for sure top two in goals allowed this season in Mexico. But anything you wanted to know, I'll let you know. I'm opening the floor, let you ask anything. So if anybody from, you know, any supporter of the Crew is listening, that they want to just, you know, whether they have questions or just they just want to know a certain, you know, information on a certain player or style.
Yeah, I think similar to what you just asked me about, you know, guys that might stand out. I don't know how many, you know, Crew fans follow Liga MX closely. So who are a couple, maybe 2-3 guys that Crew fans should know coming into this series? You know, not necessarily guys that go under the radar, but just names that mm-hmm. need to be, that the team fans need to be aware of.
So let me start with the attack. I'll go from the attack. I'll work my way down. Obviously, Rogelio Funes Mori, like, he is, to me, arguably top three striker, top four striker, and I'm being a little bit biased, in the league, I'd say in North America, just because, you know, he'll give you that flash. I mean, people can just look up on YouTube, you know, the bicycle kicks that he does in important fixtures, and he's about to be our all-time, you know, leading goal scorer for the club. He's tied with Humberto Suazo for 121 goals in club history, and he's just, and I think we were hoping that he scores that goal, like, you know, this can be to any sport, when a player is about to break a record, it can sometimes become a burden, especially if, you know, if it's like a goal or certain thing that just needs to happen. It's not like an appearance record where you just got to show up, and it's slowly starting to become a burden for him. He did miss like a penalty kick in the loss to Pachuca over the weekend. And so that's something people need to take. If he's still on that record heading into that Crew game, that's something that, you know, Crew supporters should keep in mind that, you know, if he's not looking like himself, and I think that would benefit the Crew and their defense, because like I said, just carrying that record is, looks like it's starting to become a burden. He just wants to get it out of the way, and Monterrey supporters also want him to get it out of the way just so he can be relaxed and go back to playing his normal self, because this season he's been really, really good. He's, I think, top two in goals scored this season for that, you know, golden boot race for the Apertura season, or for the Clausura season. So, you know, that's one guy that they need to watch for. And then, obviously, if a Crew supporter is a Tottenham Hotspur fan, they'll know Vincent Janssen. He's been good, but he's not your typical striker. Like, he scored some goals against Pantoja just because he got the lone start against them. They played Funes Mori, but, you know, he came on as a sub for 10-15 minutes. And what Janssen has played when you know, it's a two striker formation, he's been more of the playmaker. Mm-hmm. He'll usually try to create goals. Like, if you go look at his stats and everything, he'll be more on the key passes, all that stuff, trying to create chances. If you look at the game, he'll try to chip in a goal, but if it's him and Funes Mori, he'll be more of the playmaker. He's not necessarily like all the time, but of the two, he'll be one that does more of the playmaking. Funes Mori is really good at the link up, but in terms of like trying to dribble, trying to, you know, create a chance, it'll be Janssen. It all depends on what they want to do. Javier Aguirre isn't like married to a certain formation. He'll sometimes go with one striker. He'll go with two. It all depends on what he wants to do that for that game. It's all subject to who they play. And then heading in on whether you want to say a winger or a right midfielder, but the one player that is vital, very vital to this Monterrey side, especially this Clausura season, it's Maxi Mesa. Like, Maxi Mesa is the type of player, or, you know, his situation is where you shouldn't give up on a player so quickly that, you know, eventually he'll turn it around, because they paid about, I think, $15 million for him from Independiente. And so there was, you know, when you pay $15 million for a player, you're expecting them to hit the ground running, and that just didn't happen. And this season, though, he's been, along with Sebastian Vega, has been our best player. Like, the most, like, okay, he's the really most important player, because when he's not out on the pitch, and if anybody is, like, a tactical person or just wants to go back and watch the game, I highly suggest watch that second half from last week's game against Pachuca, where they take him out. And Vincent Janssen, you know, hit the duties of playmaking and creating fall on his shoulders. But you'll notice that, you know, it's the From the right wing, there's not really much coming from that side, just because Maxi Mesa is just, for me, he's been the most important player when it comes to creating chances, and you know, he scored some goals too, but he's very vital in creating chances from that right wing side. They've tried to move him to the left wing because Dorlan Pavón, who's another great player, but is aging and is starting to show his age. If they ever move him to that left side, Maxi Mesa is very ineffective. He's the right winger. I've been hammering at home that that's his position. They need to leave him alone in that position, and that's where he's most effective. And so, like, if Crew fans want to if they want a player that maybe they don't know too much about, but are kind of need to be worried about, I would say it's Maxi Mesa, just because our offense pretty much runs through him, because he creates a lot of, you know, and you'll see it for yourself. Or if you want to see tomorrow night, I know we're recording this on a Tuesday afternoon, but I'm going to put this out Wednesday morning. So if you're listening to this Wednesday, they're playing against Chivas. I think, I don't know, it all depends on what they want to do there. But if Maxi Mesa plays, I highly suggest everybody to watch that game. It's going to be in English on Fox Sports 1, I think, or yeah. Fox Sports 2, one of the two. It's going to be in English regardless. But yeah, I would Maxi Mesa as one guy. And then in the midfield, one of the more quiet players that he'll just go about his game is Cesar Ortiz. But I'd say heading into this game. If you would have asked, if we would have recorded this maybe like 3 or 4 weeks ago, I would say our biggest weakness would have been our midfield, just because there was at times in the season where like our link up was so bad. Like the defense just had, just the defense and the mid and the forwards just couldn't link up, and the midfield was just very atrocious. But over the last couple of weeks, it seems to have gotten better. Xavi Rodriguez has, you know, gained his confidence back, especially playing for the Mexican under 23 team. He got his confidence. It's kind of translated back to club play. But Cesar Ortiz really is that type of player where it's just go about his business. Like, he won't say much. He's just a quiet type. He's a defensive midfielder. He can do a little bit more than what you're expecting your defensive midfielder. But, you know, he's just very accountable. You know, it's just constant profession. And in the back, like we've already talked about it a little bit, on the back line, it's just national team caliber players that are really good at what they do. But I would say our weakness, in that back line, is Jesús Gallardo. Even though he's a national team player, he's very immature. Just because he'll get himself into foul trouble, and you'll see the game against Pachuca. He got two silly fouls that led to him, you know, getting two reds, and it's just immaturity. He's a really good player, but it's like those type of players where it's like, why are you doing these ridiculous fouls? Right. So like, you know, he'll just, you know, if he's not, I don't know. I'm hoping Javier Aguirre comes in and you know, he the coach was suspended because he attended his son's wedding, so he was gone for 10 days. And so I don't know, because Javier Aguirre is one of those, you know, coaches that commands respect, like just because of his, you know, his resume. And so I don't know if you know, Gallardo just, you know, it's like when the substitute teacher's in the classroom, like, you know, you're just going to go about what you're going to go back to your old habits and not really care who's in the classroom. So I feel like I'm hoping that was just it. And with, if Aguirre comes back, you know, he'll go back to being, you know, his normal self, because in the past he's shown immaturity. He's shown lack of discipline in defending. Although with Aguirre, it seems like he's really kind of told him, at least, you know, not on the record, but just the way he plays now. He used to be a player that would always jump in. You know, he was more of those, he had more characteristics offensively, would like to jump in the play. You would always see him in the box, and defense was more of a second option. But I think under Aguirre, he's really told him, hey, work on your defending before you even think about jumping into the attack. Don't worry about that. But, you know, this past week, he just went back to old habits. So I'm just hoping that is more of a, you know, the manager wasn't there, you know, he had to stay away for 10 days, which is the, you know, the quarantine limit there in Mexico. And then just, you know, going to the goalkeeper, I would say, if you asked me to pick one position where I'm really worried about that Columbus can maybe exploit, is the goalkeeping position. If they go with Hugo Gonzalez is national team caliber, I guess you can say, one of the better goalkeepers in Mexico, but he has, at least with Monterrey, he has had the habit of making blunders, especially in big games. Like against Puebla, he had his issues there. Back in 2017, when Monterrey lost the classic between them and Tigres in the final, a lot of people weren't happy with him, and that led to him departing for a couple of seasons to Necaxa, and then they brought him back. Not a lot of people were liking that idea, and a lot of the fans still don't trust him. Like, he can, and that's with us. We don't care what he does in the regular season. It's what he does in big games. Like, you can make five saves, good quality saves against a certain team in the regular season. Okay, that's nice. But when the games are really important, and when we need you to be at your best, because look, the defense will prevent a lot of scoring opportunities into the box, just because Sebastian Vegas and Cesar Montes, especially Cesar Montes, you know, he's 6'2". He can clear the ball with his head. He can use his height to his advantage. Sebastian Vegas is, you know, he's been arguably the best defender for our club this season. And, you know, so he can be saved a lot of, you know, scoring threats just because of the defense. But we do need to ask him to, in a game, you know, there's going to be two or three opportunities where either the defense is napping or they just get caught. And so that's when we ask him, hey, just please make that save. You know, it's just two or three scoring chances in a game. And you were referring to that too, like can Columbus, right. you know, take advantage of any scoring opportunities. And that's where Columbus can be a little bit dangerous, just because if they can get the, you know, if Monterrey's defense is caught napping or caught off position, that's where they need to strike. Because if you ask any Monterrey supporter, if the defense is caught and all that's left is for Hugo to make the stop, eight out of 10 supporters would say, no, I don't trust him to make that stop. So it's like, if he's okay. the guy in there, we don't have that much confidence. And referring to what you said again, you know, if Columbus can make, you know, take advantage of those opportunities, then they have a puncher's chance. So like, I'm sorry, I had to go. I went through all the list of the players as much as I can, because I know a lot of people are gonna want like some more detailed information. But that's a quick rundown of the squad and just a little bit of everything that I can touch on. That gives, you know, tries to paint a little bit better picture for anybody that doesn't follow Monterrey, even though they've heard that they have a really, you know, talented squad, which they do, and which is why we always expect them to be competing, you know, at least reach the semifinals, just because we have, you know, one of the most expensive squads in Latin America. Like I said, a lot of our players are national team caliber, so it comes with a lot of pressure that they need to perform well, and sometimes the players either crumble or rise to this pressure. It all depends on them. But yeah, this is just a little quick overview on what Columbus can expect and where they can take advantage of, like I said, take advantage of the goalkeeping. But yeah, that would be it. But any other questions you want to ask?
No, I think that was great. You know, I think that kind of lays out the challenge that the Crew is facing. I know one of our guys told me the other day that Monterrey is third most successful club at the Club World Cup that they have, you know, when you're a winner of this competition. So that just goes to show. I think it's behind Barcelona and one of the other European teams. So yeah, I mean, there's no doubt this is going to be a big challenge for Columbus.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's one of the, you know, that's one of our feathers in our cap that we're most proud of, that they do. They at least perform well. I mean, a couple of years ago, they went toe-to-toe with Liverpool, losing like an extra time. I think Roberto Firmino scored the last goal to break our hearts to think about upsetting European champions there. But yeah, and you know what? I kind of wanted to touch on that too, just because I want to get away a little bit from the matchup, just because we're all talking Super League and soccer right now. And so I wanted to touch on just these last two topics before I let you go. The Super League is obviously, you know, merging all these clubs from all over across Europe. But let me transition us over to CONCACAF, because there's been a lot of talk surrounding an MLS Liga MX merger. Just your opinion as an MLS fan, would you ever like to see that? Would you ever think, I mean, business-wise, we know why they would do it. It would just make a lot of money. Right. But, you know, obviously the travel, I mean, that's why, you know, Mexican clubs don't participate that much or don't participate. I mean, there's other factors, but one of them was always travel in the Copa Libertadores. It was just, you know, when you're going to Argentina, you know, those countries far, far down in South America, it was just, right. It was just a hassle for them. But what do you make of potential Liga MX? I mean, because over the last couple of years, MLS and Liga MX have gotten closer, whether it's the Leagues Cup. I know they were supposed to do like a Liga MX All-Star team versus the MLS All-Star team last year, but that was obviously canceled due to the pandemic. I don't know if they're going to go through with that this year, but there's just been a lot of like intertwined business decisions with both leagues. Do you ever, what are your opinions just on a potential merger? And you think just by when you just follow MLS, whether it's just journalists, fans, etc., what do you think? Or what do you, you know, from what you read, what do you gather on this type of merger?
Yeah, me personally, you know, I'm not a fan of the idea, just in the sense that, like, I think there's two already established leagues, and you have these tournaments, like the CONCACAF Champions League, where you get to see them play, and it's similar to some of the argument that's been made with the Super League in Europe, is like, do you want these games to happen all the time? Isn't there something special about having them be a unique thing that happens, you know, every so often, a couple times a year, things like that? You know, I MLS obviously doesn't have the tradition of Liga MX, the long time, you know, kind of clubs and whatnot. But I think establishing each other's own traditions and or sticking with the traditions is important. And kind of formulating a league on top of that to merge the two, you're right. It would be very much about the money and not so much about, you know, kind of keeping the tradition of things. And I do think that there could be a better way to set up the Champions League, the CONCACAF Champions League, that is, where, you know, we do get some more games and, you know, at some point maybe even do it similar to the way the current European Champions League is set up with group stages and stuff. And I know they used to do that in the past, but I think there's more interest now. So I think that could be a way that you could kind of compromise and get more interaction between the two leagues. But I don't think you need to you know, come up with one league for you know, the, I guess Canada's part of MLS, so all three countries. I think the way things are is fine, and continue to build and develop these leagues, and then figure out ways to have these tournaments, or, you know, you mentioned an all-star game, a Campeones Cup, things like that, that, you know, you get enough matchups between the two. So that's my personal opinion. I do think there are people that think it's a good idea, though. You know, I've heard, at least in throughout the States, you know, the talk about that, and it kind of comes and goes in waves, right, when there's more talk about it. But, you know, so there are definitely arguments I've heard that I understand. I just think, you know, each league has good things going for it, and to try and disrupt that at this point just seems silly to me. And like you said, it would be all about money. And, you know, I think they just need to respect what each league has and, you know, figure out other ways to find competitions.
Yeah, no, I'm on the same boat as you. And I think every, you know, fan of a Mexican club pretty much shares that sentiment. Mm-hmm. And last thing, I want to talk about the CONCACAF Champions League, because this year has been very, it's one of the years where it's been very, like, the parity has been very noticeable. I mean, once in a while, you know, you'll have a Central American club, like last year, Olympia made it all the way to the semifinals. But mm-hmm. this year, it's been really noticeable where it's like, okay, the parity is just like, it's just the MLS clubs and Mexican clubs are here, and the Central American and Caribbean clubs are like way down here. And then you notice a lot of people complaining about the refereeing. There's been some very dirty fouls that some MLS clubs or fan bases have been pointing out. And then you have other off the pitch, shenanigans, I guess. I mean, I know two players from the Haitian team that went to Mexico who didn't have the funds to go to Mexico, like to travel there and compete. You know, CONCACAF had to, you know, I think give them a loan for them to cover off costs, and then two players defected. And then I think there was another player from Marathon playing against Portland that defected as well. So it's like a lot of shenanigans that kind of make me realize that this team or this competition really doesn't need any more expansion. But what do you make of this tournament, especially this year and into the future? As I said, the CONCACAF wants to expand this back to what it used to be with groups, etc. And I just feel like, I don't know, just watching a lot of the Central American teams, a lot of the Caribbean teams, it's just, I don't know if that's it. I don't know how entertaining it is to watch a team real, like we saw against Cruz Azul beat up, you know, the Haitian team 8-0. Like, I don't know how much you can get of entertainment you can get out of that, especially with the group stage. But what do you make of this CONCACAF Champions League tournament overall in this season? Because, I mean, Columbus, I mean, yeah, they lost a young player to a non-contact injury, but it really hasn't been, from what I've seen, they really didn't deal with like some of the refereeing that was questioned. I mean, you could do it. You can, you know, answer this question more a little bit better than I can. I didn't see any like referees, you know, just like, what are you doing? How is that not a red? The player just really got stomped on, you know, like other games where you saw that players were, where it was just dirty fouls and they were receiving yellow cards or nothing at all. But what do you make of this tournament, the refereeing, everything? Just, you know, it's been a while since Columbus has competed in this tournament, but what do you make of this tournament overall and this season?
Yeah, I like the Champions League in idea. I think it's a fun tournament for sure. I think that, you know, there is probably something to the refereeing to some degree, but I think it probably gets blown out of proportion. I mean, the tackle in the Saprissa Philadelphia Union game was probably the one, at least in the United States, that had the most coverage that I noticed. But there was also another tackle in that game against Philly that wasn't a red card earlier in the match. I think you probably, MLS fans tend to complain about it because they're on the MLS side of it, right? So you kind of, you notice more when it's your team, your league, whatever the case may be. I like the idea. I think it's fun to have these tournaments where you're playing these other teams. I do agree with you. The competition is not probably high enough to expand at this point. I think that there needs to either be more teams from the bigger leagues, that can compete getting into the tournament, or, you know, if you're going to expand, that is, or there needs to be a process to provide, you know, more funds to some of these smaller countries, smaller leagues, to, you know, make them, you know, grow and, you know, try and help that. And I don't know if that's necessarily CONCACAF's responsibility, but I think, like, that's, you know, watching the growth of MLS over the years, it's as the money has come in and you want to see players develop from academies and whatnot, but what's made MLS start to contend a little bit more in some of these competitions is, you know, teams have been willing to spend more money and been able to spend more money. So I think that certainly plays a part as well. But I like it in principle. You know, I think it's a good kind of starting thing. Now you have a regular, you know, annual CONCACAF competition. It's certainly not perfect. And I think over the years, we're going to see it adjust and until they kind of are able to figure out a good spot to kind of leave it in for some time. And obviously, you've seen that with the way they've adjusted it over the years. And even last year, you know, dealing with the pandemic, you know, having all the games in one location and things like that, they've been able to adjust that way. So I like the idea. I think it's good that there is something. But it's still a ways off from being the tournament that, you know, they have in Europe and in South America and things like that, that, you know, are what I think fans kind of know on a global stage.
And just last question regarding that, MLS teams haven't won this competition as constructed. This format was introduced, I think, in 2008. Just you overall, what are you, and obviously a lot of people point out the scheduling wise, and now if CONCACAF expands back to group stage, it'll obviously go, it would start in the fall and then transition all the way to the summer. But what are you, you know, is that the only reason why a CONCACAF team hasn't won this tournament, or an MLS team hasn't won this CONCACAF tournament, just because the timing just isn't right, because a lot of MLS clubs are in preseason, and so they're just getting barely getting their rhythm together. They don't know each other, especially if a team has had a lot of turnover. But what are your theories, I guess you can say, why an MLS team hasn't won this tournament, and how do you think they'll do if and when, I think, they go back to a regular group stage, starting in 2023, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. Obviously, being in preseason as opposed to, you know, 10 or so, however many games it is into a regular season is different. But, you know, I also think that there's a talent gap between most MLS teams that have been in this tournament, and especially the teams from Mexico, Liga MX, that's noticeable. And you've seen MLS teams get closer and closer. Obviously, there's been teams in the finals here recently that, you know, have obviously contended, and some of those games, especially last year's, were very close. But I think that it's probably more so that there's just a talent gap. You know, you mentioned the back line alone for Monterrey, and I think of the Cruz back line as being very good, but there's only really one full international in Jonathan Mensah, who I mentioned, on the back line. Now, you know, Milton Valenzuela, a young left back from Argentina, was called up to the U23s for his country, but, you know, it's just different. They don't have that same level. Now there are some teams in MLS that have tried to build that way with some of the finances, but there's also the kind of restrictions that you have in MLS, that the salary caps, and you know, you can only have so many designated players, which are players over that get paid over X amount of dollars, and things like that. So that certainly kind of restricts things too, from, you know, a lot of other soccer leagues where there aren't those kind of restrictions. And MLS has kind of loosened over the years, so we'll see what happens there. But yeah, I mean, the preseason thing is part of it, but I don't think that's the only thing. I think there is a gap still. And, you know, even if an MLS team is able to win it, I don't think that necessarily means that that gap has completely closed, especially if you look at the leagues as a whole, but not just one team against one team. You know, I think if you look at the bottom of MLS, some of the teams that haven't spent money and have kind of just struggled for years, you know, that's pretty, they would be pretty low down in kind of the hierarchy of Mexican teams, I believe.
Patrick, thanks for joining me. Appreciate your insight on the Crew. I hope that I can give you, I gave you enough insight on Monterrey and what the Crew can expect next week and the following week in this two-legged series. Anything you want to add? I know, well, like I said, a lot of people can follow your stuff on at Massive Report. I know you're, like I said, you're gonna get some lurkers there. You're gonna get some Spanish comments from time to time. But what can people check out in terms of coverage for this two-legged series? I know you do some. I know you do an Instagram. I think it's Instagram TV. I know I saw the last one you guys did for your Instagram account for Massive Report. But what can people expect in terms of your coverage for this matchup over these next 2 weeks?
Yeah, we'll have plenty. Yeah, we do stuff during the games, Instagram lives that then get posted on the Instagram TV. Ori, who works closely with me, does a lot of that social media side of things. But the Crew don't play again until this game, so that's kind of going to be our focus. We're expecting to talk to the Caleb Porter, the head coach, and a couple of the players here later this week, you know, kind of starting to shift attention towards this game after the MLS opener against Philly. So we'll have a lot of coverage on this game and kind of breaking down what to expect from the Crew. We also do our weekly podcast, usually on Mondays. We didn't record last night because there were conflicts, but it's usually early in the week. This week will probably be more about the two games last week, but next week we'll definitely really dive into this matchup. And I'm sure we'll talk some of it tonight, but that always gets posted on our website and is on you know, anywhere you can find podcasts. It's just the Massive Report podcast. So all good places to check out if your listeners are interested in learning about the Crew and whatnot. I think, like I said at the beginning, I think we do a pretty good job of covering things from a lot of different angles.
I know a lot of people are going to want to be interested, especially that podcast next week. So if anybody is interested, it's Massive Report. I mean, you just find it on Twitter. A lot of people, you know, I'm mostly active on Twitter. So, and I know you guys post everything on all of the social media. So, yeah. If anybody's interested, just listen to Massive or go to Massive Report on Twitter, read their articles, listen to their podcasts. And, you know, if you have an Instagram account, check out their Instagram live. Anything else? I'm not sure if I missed anything that you want to add or promote, just, you know, before I wrap up.
No, I think it's good. I think we covered a lot. This was a lot of fun. I appreciate you having me on and talking about this game.
My pleasure. Thank you for joining me. So for Patrick, I'm Eddie. Talk to you later.